therefore seize this opportunity to fulfill the long-held promise of a new world order, where brutality will go unrewarded.
Just in case you don't remember, let me jog your memory. In a church they called the Waco Compound, back in April 93, 17 little children, all so helpless and so small, died a senseless death of gas and flames. How many names can you recall? 17 little children. Don't it make you wonder why? 17 little children. How could they deserve to die? Maybe we should stop and ask ourselves if we become so blind. Will 17 little children finally open up your mind? How did you sleep last night, Bill Clinton? Tell me, did you feel their pain? As 17 little children cried out and perished in the flames, Attorney General Janet Reno, I accept your offer to resign. How can you stand for law and order now when you won't answer to your crimes? 17 little children, all so helpless and so small. 17 little children. Names can you recall? Maybe we should stop and ask ourselves if we become so blind. Will 17 little children finally open up your mind? I've heard it said the Branch Davidians only got what they deserved. Yet no one seems to know what laws were broken, what was in the warrant they never served. Yesterday I sold my TV set, stop my subscription to the Times. To me it's plain to see the media was an accomplice to these crimes. 17 little children, don't it make you wonder? 17 little children, how could they deserve to die? Maybe we should stop and ask ourselves, have we become so blind? Will 17 little children finally open up your mind?
Insurgent Radio Network calling.
Whoa.
Insurgent Radio Network calling. This is the Insurgent Radio Network, and we've got a little bit too much volume there, boy. Terrible Tommy here in the bunker right here in North Central Indiana, and it is winterland out there this morning. I heard some high winds in the night, and I peeked out there, and man, that snow was coming down, and we've almost got a whiteout right now, man. Everything's covered with wet snow. I think we got about 6 inches overnight, and so from 50 degrees yesterday to down about 30 today. Well, anyhow, that's it here at the Bob Matthews Memorial Bunker in North Central Indiana. P.O. Box 401, Warsaw, Indiana, 46581. And what is it today? This is, I believe, the 12th, yeah. This is March the 12th, 2014, Wotan's Day. David Lane's favorite day. Did you know that Homeland Security is almost totally privatized? Yeah. And you thought it was a federal government situation? Maybe in name only. Yeah, it's privatized. And they're handing out billions of dollars in contracts all over the place as political payoffs. And you got to listen to everybody if you want to get a picture of what's going on. So here, listen to this from a black talk show.
People than the Homeland Security apparatus in this country. It's the apparatus that justifies surveilling us. It's the apparatus that justifies militarizing police departments and much, much more. And Bernie, I almost called him Bernie Sanders, sorry. Mm-hmm. Bernie Thompson, you know, when you go to Black Caucus's annual legislative weekend, the main seminars and breakout sessions that Bernie Thompson sponsors are how to become a minority contractor for the Homeland Security mm-hmm. apparatus. Mm-hmm. And Homeland Security, finally, it's worth pointing out that Homeland Security, while it is a vast and enormous and violent part of our government, it's almost all privatized. It has very few direct government employees. Most of its expenditures mm-hmm. are contract expenditures, and so that gives Bernie a lot of money to spread around. So there's quite a number that there's a modest number of black people in Mississippi, you know, who are Homeland Security millionaires. And they, too, are part of this struggle, but not necessarily on the right side.
Yeah, yeah.
So now, surprise, surprise, we've got, and now think about all over the country that these things are being handed out as special pork barrel contracts to blacks and other so-called minorities, and it's privatized. In other words, Homeland Security is really just another agency controlled, and really the strings are being pulled by predatory capitalists, the corporations. So the corporations they're involved in the defense of the United States from you. That's who they're afraid of. Yeah, so anyhow, there was a little bit of that slipped under the fence, and I got it from a black talk show. And every once in a while I get some goodies from a black talk show. So there they are. They've got these blacks down in Mississippi getting special contracts from Homeland Security, and they're millionaires. And you can't get a job. Well, what do you think about that? Well, here's a water alert for us from California. You may have heard some of this before, but it says here, most almond orchards are also in counties suffering what meteorologists call extreme drought conditions. Well, you don't have to have almonds to survive. December and January, the peak of California's rain season, were the driest on record. Subsequent storms have helped. But looking ahead to the dry summer months, Governor Jerry Brown has already declared a drought emergency. The California State Water Project, which supplies drinking water to two-thirds of the Californians, has taken the unprecedented decision to allocate no water for agriculture this year. Zero. That means growers will be forced to rely on groundwater on their property or water that they can buy from other irrigation districts. It won't amount to much, however, and it will be pricey. We're in uncharted territory as far as the water allocations are concerned. Richard Wacott, CEO of the Almond Board of California, told Market Watch. But one thing is clear. There will be an impact. That includes letting trees go. Growers are talking about sacrificing trees, many of them with another 5 to 7 years of commercial production in them. All the years I've been at the board, we've never heard of anything like this. Well, you're going to hear of a lot more as time goes on, and I'm not sure it's such a bad thing. Oh, Metzger, you are a crazy guy. Well, let's look at it this way. No agriculture in California. Of course, you got to understand they furnish a hell of a lot of the agriculture crops for the country. But on the other hand, no crops, no Mexicans. Or at least not in the agricultural areas. That's going to drive a lot of them home, as probably this cold-ass weather will here in the Midwest, too. I know people have told me they've seen when it gets cold, see guys headed back towards Mexico. So some things can be a blessing, and just all in the way you look at it. It's going to mean that people in other parts of the country are going to have to start growing more vegetables and so forth for their own personal needs, and also start up little stands along the road to sell vegetables and fruit to other people. So in some ways, it's it'll be a good chance for young people to start what we used to call truck farms, where they've got maybe 10 acres and they're all in vegetables and like that. So there's a lot of good can come out of this, and I figured a long time ago that the population would outrun the water supply in the western states just by the increased demographics and numbers of people. It had to happen. Because those are desert, semi-desert areas. And you may get a few real good years. And, of course, they don't manage water properly. They don't really have that many big reservoirs and save the water. So, anyhow, you can look at it one of two ways. Yeah. So, I look at it the positive way that less water, less bad people that are going to cause us problems. Now, of course, first they'll turn to the federal government. But the federal government is broke. And they've cut way back on the food stamps. So, of course, a lot of them will turn to crime, and that'll force white working people to resist and respond in kind. So, it's going to be interesting to see what happens in California. Well, I received an email from one of our friends today, but I've had to put out to people that you got to watch out for this spreading system rumors. There's a whole contingency of people in Washington, D.C., Wall Street, and on the Internet that put out false flag stuff. This starts out and says it's a rumor. And I see it went out because he didn't BCC this stuff. It's going out to 10 or 15 people. And I recognize them. They're all right-wingers. The rumor is with the UN agenda of total gun control worldwide in every country where no civilian can own a gun or have a gun. This has sparked smart whiteys to come up with new high-tech gadgets. Well, anyhow, don't listen to every rumor you hear about they're going to pick up the guns, they're picking up the guns and like that, because if they don't know where the guns are, they can't pick them up anyhow, and there's millions of guns, and not only in this country, but all over the world. And if you really get to where you have to have a gun, well, there's plenty of system people out there that carry guns, and they store the guns, too. And the black KKK doesn't have any problem getting a hold of these guns. They just knock somebody over the head and take their gun. So I wouldn't worry that much about the gun thing. And I told them, quit putting out rumors that are probably generated by the system itself. That's the problem with the reactionary right. They always put out bad news and news put out by the system itself to make you feel like there's nothing you can do and it's all over. So what I say is put out things about what we're doing to them or what we'd like to do to them or what's possible to do to them. And quit putting out all that stuff that's regurgitating system propaganda. I tend to throw out a whole bunch of emails that come in to me that are obviously, unless I change them around and reword them, they're counterproductive and they're negative, you know. Well, let's check in with populist Jim Hightower and see what his message is for today.
The giants of food manufacturing are very concerned about you. They fear you could come down with a terrible plague called consumer confusion, and these selfless corporate entities are going all out to save you from it. The altruistic corporations say that this plague emanates from the grimy and untrustworthy grassroots. Indeed, several states intend to require food manufacturers that put genetically modified organisms in their products to include that information on their labels. Labeling advocates note that since millions of consumers don't want their families eating foods with altered DNA, putting the phrase, contains GMO ingredients, on the packages will let every shopper decide whether to buy that product or not. It seems both simple and honest. No way, shout lobbyists for the food adulterators. One, they claim that such efforts would create a patchwork of state labeling laws, inflicting confusion on consumers. Also, they say the labels might further spread confusion by implying that the genetically tampered ingredients are, well, tampered with by corporate engineers. So, the benevolent corporations are lobbying Congress to save you from confusion by autocratically preempting the state's authority to write consumer protection laws. Instead, the industry demands that a federal agency be directed to create a national labeling program that would take precedence over all state laws. Not that the national GMO label would be mandatory. No, no, it would be voluntary, so each corporation could decide for itself whether to tell consumers what's in their food. This is Jim Hightower saying, I was born at night, but it wasn't last night. No consumer is so confused as to believe that even a single GMO user would, quote, volunteer to be honest with us. Anything less than mandatory GMO labeling is nothing but flagrant consumer fraud.
Well, that was pretty good, Jimmy, but you can do better than that. Come on, let it all hang out, okay?
Never let it be said that the uber-rich bankers of Wall Street are too uptight to get down. A recent article by reporter Kevin Roos reveals that some 200 of the elitist financial tycoons turn into party animals at least once a year. The occasion is the annual black tie induction ceremony of Kappa Beta Phi, a secret Wall Street fraternity dating back to the 1929 crash that caused the Great Depression. Roos waltzed right into the St. Regis Hotel ballroom a couple of years ago to behold the madcap event. Top dogs from J.P. Morgan Chase, BlackRock, Citigroup, AIG, and other Goliaths were munching on foie gras and laughing uproariously at silly skits, bad musical parodies, and dirty jokes performed by 21 younger Wall Streeters being initiated into the billionaire's frat group. Adding to the gaiety, the inductees had to dress in drag, wearing wigs and gold-sequined gowns. The banker's idea of hilarity included sexist and homophobic jokes about Hillary Clinton and Representative Barney Frank. Also, a hedge fund honcho dressed in ragamuffin tie-dyed clothes to represent the 99%, and various songs bragged about the bailout Wall Street got from sad sack taxpayers. As Roos put it, the whole evening amounted to a gigantic middle finger to Main Street. The irony is that these are the pampered titans of finance who have lately been wailing that they should get more respect from the general public. One of the chief whiners has been billionaire speculator Wilbur Ross, who's complained that the 1% is being picked on for political reasons. This is Jim Hightower saying, picked on? The word you're looking for, sir, is saved. But rather than offering a thank you, Ross was the grand swipe of Kappa Beta Phi, who presided over the gala, mocking the very public that saved the whole pathetic bunch of Wall Street narcissists.
Now, this is the kind of propaganda I like to see. Yeah, this is a poll result that just came into the bunker here. I'll read it off to you. What do terrorists think of the NSA having success or access to their internet and phone records? 18% said they aren't concerned because all of their arms buying and bomb material collecting is actually completely legal. 21% said say it makes them feel safer from other better terrorists. And 13% said they believe this is a serious violation of the freedom they hate us for having. 18% said wish the U.S. government was more transparent about this and other things, like how best to kidnap a diplomat's kid. 10% feel that they have nothing to hide because they know better than to put sensitive terrorism planning in an email. 13% are confident the system is so poorly run that they'll never actually be caught. 6% feel jealous of how easily the NSA is spreading fear and mistrust. And 1% accidentally hit detonator codes on the cell phone while trying to answer the survey. Well, it looks like they're going to rebuild the Titanic. And the main reason they're rebuilding it is because with global warming, there's no more icebergs to sink it. Well, I bet you didn't think that Indianapolis, Indiana would be much of a crime city. Well, you can almost tell the percentage of N-words in a city by the amount of murders. And if that's correct, between the first of the year and February, there were 25 murders in Indianapolis. That's a lot of murders for 1 month. Those Christ insanity people are just not doing their job. Well, these latest findings ought to blow the jury system out of the water. Ah, yes, I remember it well. Both the justice system and the mental health profession work under the assumption that a person's recollections of a recent and particular traumatic event is both accurate and indelible. Well, Tommy says, I've known for years that policing agencies realize that witnesses, eyewitnesses, are notoriously mistaken. But for lots of people, we found that neither of these assumptions is true, says C.A. Morgan, an associate clinical professor of psychiatry at the School of Medicine. In fact, we learned that we could shift such memories with relatively easy little effect. It was really surprised, and I was really surprised and more than a little alarmed. Psychologists have already documented the misinformation effect, the errors in recall that can occur when often long after the fact individuals are exposed to false or misleading information about an experience. But Morgan and his colleagues are believed to be the first researchers to show that it also impacts recent memories. Now, just think about this in regard to witnesses in crimes. The research team's subjects were more than 800 active duty Navy and Marine Corps personnel enrolled in the U.S. Navy Survival, Evasion, Resistance, and Escape School. As part of the survival school training, each participant is thrown into a mock prisoner of war camp and interrogated using methods that resembled those that might occur in a real situation. Suffice it to say, the experience at the school is highly stressful, write Morgan and his team. The paper first appeared online in the International Journal of Law and Psychiatry. After a three-day ordeal that included sleep deprivation, food deprivation, isolation, and an anti-United States harangue, the trainees were freed. At a debriefing session, Morgan and his team administered a questionnaire designed to assess how well the soldiers remembered details about the physical experience of their interrogators and the room in which they were grilled. The questions for the control group were straightforward and fact-based, such details as the interrogator's height, weight, sex, hair, and color, the presence of glasses, or a weapon, and if there was a telephone in the room. Each soldier was also handed a photo array of 9 small pictures of people and asked to point out the interrogator, though the staff members who had actually served as a soldier's interrogator was never in the group. You see, now this is some, these are people in the same room with somebody and they can't remember. Now, you can imagine how bad witnesses are out on the street. Quote, they did a pretty good job of getting things right, especially details you could detect at a distance of 20 feet or more, said Morgan. But when the researcher introduced false or misleading information, the soldier's recall accuracy plummeted. For example, in the control group of 16 of 158 trainees thought, mistakenly, that there was a telephone in the room. But when another group of soldiers was given misleading information on their questionnaire, 365 out of 372 in that group said a telephone was present. The researchers were even able to increase the percentage of false positive photo identifications through a variety of tricks, raising it from 53% to 91%. We showed that memory, even recent memory, of stressful events is malleable, says Morgan. We're looking for ways we can make people, from soldiers to members of juries, more resistant to memory-altering techniques. Well, there you go. I think that that article in this latest research, if you had a problem, I think I'd want my attorney to use this as a type of argument in a trial to show that witnesses are wrong most of the time. So anyhow, I thought that was very interesting for us. Now, that came out of the Yale Alumni Magazine for March-April 2013. Well, let's talk about Indiana here and the right to work we've got here in this state. Yep. Get this mic back a little bit farther. Poverty and productivity, how right to work laws don't work at all. February 1st, 2012, Indiana Governor Mitch Daniels signed a right to work provision in the state's labor laws, making Indiana the 23rd right-to-work state in the nation and the first in more than a decade to pass a law undermining the ability of unions to organize and represent their members. As I write this, efforts are underway in at least half dozen additional states, including Ohio, Maine, Michigan, Minnesota, and Oregon, to follow the Indiana example and further limit the rights of unions across the nation. Despite the eagerness to adopt these laws, the question of whether right-to-work laws actually benefit a state economically has remained largely unanswered. In this paper, using the most recent data available from public sources, I've analyzed a spectrum of 7 measures for standard of living, including gross domestic product, poverty rates, life expectancy rates, and income gap, and determined whether there are differences in these measures between the 22 right-to-work states, not including Indiana, which joined them after this data was collected, and the 28 worker-friendly states. The result clearly showed the adverse consequences of right-to-work laws on people living in these states, and should inform the good efforts of union members and allies to quell the ongoing efforts to spread these laws. Let's see here. The gross domestic product, or the amount of goods and services produced in a year, is probably the most accessible single measure of standard of living. A high GDP positively correlates with a high standard of living, and changes in living standards can be swiftly observed in corresponding changes in GDP. According to 2009 data, the GDP per capita for worker-friendly states collectively was $43,899, while the GDP per capita for right-to-work states was $38,755, or 13.3% lower. It is worth emphasizing that GDP represents goods and services produced and is not the same as per capita income. Thus, the initial analysis of this measure indicates that the worker-friendly states appear to be significantly more productive than the right-to-work states. Poverty rates, obviously a state with a high standard of living would be expected to have fewer residents living in poverty. Using the U.S. Census income data and applying it to the two groups of the states, we find again that the right-to-work states have a lower standard of living. 11 of the 15 states with the highest poverty rates are right-to-work, while 9 of the 11 states with the lowest are worker-friendly. Furthermore, the percentage of the 2008 population living in poverty in right-to-work states was 14.4%, while the percentage in worker-friendly states was 12.4%. To put this difference in perspective, if the rate of poverty in the right-to-work states was extended across the nation, an additional 3,670,000 American men, women, and children would be living in poverty today. So there you go. And it's obvious if people don't have money in their pockets, they can't spend it. I mean, you know, they can't spend money if they don't have it. And when you cut their wages down and cut their standard of living down, and obviously they don't buy things. So, I mean, it's a clever way the corporations have mesmerize the working class into buying into this nonsense. I couldn't believe it, what was going on here in Indiana with his right to work and mingling around and talking to working class people. The misinformation and stupidity of the average white worker or worker period is unbelievable. They will spend all their time wailing about, oh, unions are corrupt. But they don't spend any time talking about the super-duper corruption of the ruling class corporations. I mean, it's unbelievable. It's like, it's almost like they're afraid of them. They're, you know, afraid to challenge them because they're in control. And so, instead of saying, yeah, there's corruption in unions, well, we'll clean that up, but because you need to have the ability to negotiate with employers for the standard of living and to increase your pay and all that kind of stuff. But the average worker is his own worst enemy, just like happened just down here in the South just not long ago at the Volkswagen place, where they didn't have collective bargaining at Volkswagen, and they voted for it in the UAW, and I think it was 780 voted no for the union and 600 voted yes. And yet, turned out right after that, the Volkswagen said that they're going to expand their plant and everything. Anyhow, the Republicans, see, there's a Republican congressman down there was saying, oh, well, if you vote this union in, the Volkswagen's going to leave town and not going to be any jobs at all. Well, it was total bullshit. So Volkswagen, to their, you know, as doing business the way business should be done, they're constructing their own labor unit within the company to work out problems between the workers and management. And that's the way it always should be. And so anyhow, it's I don't know how far these people think they're going to allow this thing to go before they're totally without any standard of living. On the road I live on, it's a working class road. I mean, there's hundreds of cars for people going to work and hundreds of cars people going home from work every day. And but there's also during the day quite a number of you can tell poor working class white men with pickup trucks filled with any kind of metal they can get a hold of, you know, anything from fencing to you name it, anything they can get hold of is metal, because they take it up to about a mile north of my place and they've got a place where you can sell the metal to and get some money. And there's a whole lot of this working class people without jobs back here that are living off simply scrounging around all over the countryside looking for metal to sell at the surplus yard. So, I mean, that's how bad it is right now. Hey, Joey, thanks for the extra 20 that went off to Scutari yesterday. No, wait a minute. That was 40 that was sent off to Scutari yesterday because someone else sent a little money in. Well, I'm going to read you a letter from an inmate here. He's not one of the people that went in there for the right reasons, but it's interesting. Greetings. I hope you're in good health and spirits. Here's a couple of drawings for you. One is done in pamphlet form, so if you can use it, and in any way, I'd like to hear that you would. I'd seen that image in a book and thought it was worth drawing. The trouble is, it's more of this World War II Nazi stuff, you know, that the right wing has used for so long. Anyhow, things here at my new facility are not bad, although there isn't really any like-minded individuals as me or any worth the effort. The decline in the quality of the white man seems to so apparent here. When I see whites in all manner portraying the savage or wearing that stupid deity on their heads proclaiming Islam, it sickens me to the core. Some individuals approach me and try to have a conversation, but it's pointless. They see my tattoos and think, oh, I'm like you, bro. But to listen to them, it's apparent that stupidity runs rampant in their veins. One kid says, I know the 13 words. Wow. So I says, what are they? Oh, I don't get them memorized, really. I don't even bother correcting them. And that is the 14 words or any other for that comments I hear. Comrade, these kids are too far gone in most cases, and when one is trying to tell me how Aryan he is while the whole of his speech patterned as jungle lingo, I fight the urge not to smash him, but rather to say, you tell me you're like me, but you know nothing of me or what I'm about, and you talk like a nigger all the while telling me you're a racist. It's insanity on all sides. I am one who carries myself as I should be. I engage in no trivial crap, nor say a word to the pickle lips or the bean bags. So combine my conduct with my tattoos and others who proclaim Aryan notice and draw to me. But once they realize I'm the real deal, if you will, and pull their cork, they either steer clear of me or try to befriend me, which isn't easy to do. And in most cases, if you just sit and observe things, you'll see that these white men are far from it, by my standards, and even will be seen sitting and cutting it up with the niggers and the spics. And if asked, what are you doing, they all give the lame excuse that, we have to coexist, bro. Looky here, I've been doing time on and off since 95. And I do just fine never uttering a word or willfully sitting with the savages. To be honest, the ones I do encounter who are true are 99% ones who are not from Pennsylvania and done fine in other states and done time in other states. The degeneracy today is a damn shame in our white generation. I'm sure none of this is new to you. And to me as well, so I'm sure you get my point. I'm still under STG supervision. And in general population phase of the SIG program. They started in 2012. I'm one of the first to be placed in it, and the only white man, and amongst the first to be put in block in the GP. So I'm closely watched. They're expecting. That's funny. Now here's one white guy surrounded by non-whites and they're watching him. They're expecting some wild Aryan cannon, I guess, by the way I'm viewed here. It's hard enough. It's bad enough to listen to the idiot inmates, but these pigs ain't much better. I get the quote, I read your file, I don't want no shit out of you, or we don't want to see any groups pop up here, or we will come after you for it, unquote. It's really somewhat amazing, or amusing, in a way, for me, because the idiots don't know how to take me or what to expect. I'm a rare item in Pennsylvania, and when things are rare, you treat it with caution. I'm from New Mexico, Albuquerque. I've done time there, Texas, and Georgia. But my file out of New Mexico and Texas is what they look at and base their retarded comments on and their treatment of me. And all honest, I lay low and mind my own business. But see, they fear that more than the wild always in the spotlight individual. Then they see the honorable people I correspond with, and it only adds to their opinion of me. On the flip side of all this, most times they leave me the fuck alone, as well as the idiots I'm surrounded with. Anyhow, I hope things are well for you and everyone. I look forward to hearing from you when you find time. I'm going to be a grandfather once again in a few months. This will be number 5 out of my 4 girls with my wife, April. I turned 40 in February 28th and came up for parole in November of this year. So anyhow. Now, this guy's pretty sharp. Not sharp enough to stay out of prison. I think the first mistake was to get into prison. But anyhow, I write guys like this back, the ones that seem like they're have some value. And the one thing I try to get them off of, I say, if you're going to get anywhere in your surroundings, you got to be somewhat of a teacher like Richard Scutari does. And some of the order boys have been good teachers on the inside. And I say, you got to get away from just this right-wing Nazi stuff. And in fact, that's basically what he sent me. And a little of that stuff goes a long way. And so obviously he's got some probably swastika tattoos. No wonder guys approach him. They assume he's like them and into this Hollywood Nazi stuff. So what I promote is, and I send them a lot of more educated information that helps the race on not only race, but environment, medical, everything else, to where these guys that are fairly sharp in there can start changing their attitude and influencing a few of these other people. Now, I'm sure you're not going to influence very many of them, but there's a lot of good potential behind the walls, and they've got plenty of time to think about it. But if you just send them this right-wing, jingoish crap stuff, I hate the Jews, and let's get the niggers, I mean, they're never going to learn anything else. And so that's what I do. And I think it helps, and I think that a lot of these white boys will come out of those prisons, straighten up, and be good soldiers. So that's my story, and I'm sticking to it. The thing I try to do is get them out of this right-wing stuff and say, look, on many issues, we're very left. We have no truck with the white ruling class, and we're in a white civil war, and you got to remember, you're working class. And sometimes, in speaking to these black separatists, black nationalists, you can hit a common chord and not be classed as a race mixer. You're straight out that you're white racial separatist, just like they're black separatists. But on many issues, coming out of the working class, we can agree on these things. And so, why make it hard for yourself by simply butting heads with everybody around you? Having been around these black separatists and black nationalists, I've been treated with nothing but respect. That doesn't mean I'm joining up with them. Well, here's an email that came in just while we're talking here. This is from Axel down in Brazil. I wonder if they accept young people into your group. I'm 16 years old. I live in Brazil, and I'm white. Yeah, well, we sure do. And you send me stamps and envelope. Stamps, and I'll send you literature. Okay. I want to get a hold of you before the military-industrial complex gets a hold of you, whether you're in Brazil or wherever you're at. Because we talk about white people worldwide here, not just white nationalism. I don't like that term, white nationalist, because it tends to harken back to the strict nationalism that can cause problems between people of the white race. It needs to be an international, white people worldwide. Going along with that prison letter I was reading to you, there's another problem we have, and that is, if you've seen old pictures of the Soviet Union, the real older pictures of the people shuffling around in tattered clothes and looking very down, nobody really smiling or anything like that. I see our population becoming like that too, where people sort of trudge around and wear tattered clothes and all that kind of stuff, and women who don't keep their hair decent and all that kind of stuff. And I'll tell you one thing, you go around to clubs and so forth and lodges and so forth, and the despicable way that most working class whites dress today when they don't need to, don't tell me. I mean, you can get some pretty nice duds at the thrift shops and so forth. You can buy suits and everything else. But I'll tell you what, the ruling class dress fit to kill. We don't expect working class people to dress fit to kill, but at least dress with some dignity, you know. A t-shirt and a pair of overalls and a baseball cap is not really the Saturday night choice of of clothing, if you ask me, especially when it's your wife wearing them. And then if your wife is 100 pounds overweight, you've got another problem, or if you're 100 pounds overweight. So this whole idea of lack of self-respect is rampant among the white working class. I mean, you know, there used to be the people go out on Friday, Saturday night, they spruced up a little bit. You don't have to wear a tuxedo. You don't have to try to emulate the stupid ruling class. But you can dress reasonably with a, you know, a regular shirt and maybe a sport coat or a nice-looking jacket and pants and like that. And, you know, I'll tell you one thing that you may find strange. And I saw this in California. I had an associate out there I knew, a guy who I casually knew, and he was from South America, and he was an overseer on some of the big ranches down there, and he always wore a cowboy hat or a Western hat. And these illegal aliens, when they'd come around, now he was not a white man. He was brown. But whenever these illegal aliens would come around him, it would be like they would be almost bowing before him. That somehow the way he held himself and that hat denoted some type of power. And they really treated him with total respect. Well, I'll tell you what, I noticed that here. Well, I've noticed it in Southern California, too, because I've been wearing a cowboy or a Western hat for a long time. And when I go around here in the supermarkets and so forth, almost everybody tips their hat and says hello to me. And they're not doing that to everybody. And I think it has to do, number one, with how you carry yourself, and number two, a nice-looking Western hat instead of that traditional old baseball cap. But I notice it all the time. I'm talking about men my age and younger that don't generally say much to other people unless they know them, but they always nod their head or say something in respect when I walk towards them. And I'm not bragging about this. I'm just saying that this is... And usually I'm dressed decently, too, you know. I'm not a super, super dresser, but I dress in a manner that I think is reasonably respectable. And then coupling that with the power position of the hat, you should try it. If you think I'm crazy, try it. And also, if you got long, stringy hair, fix your hair, man. At least if you got long hair, put it in a braid behind your neck. A lot of guys do that, and fine. But I don't have that option myself. So anyhow, the way you dress and the way you purport yourself and the way you walk means a lot as far as getting respect among your fellow white people. Working person, and maybe you can encourage them to do better. And women, she-wolves too, do that, because it's very discouraging to go into a working class place to have a beer maybe on Friday, Saturday night and see all these, number one, way overweight women and guys just wearing a t-shirt, crummy pants, and hair all not done. I mean, you know, I sit there and I wonder how guys can want to even go to bed with a woman like that. And, on the other hand, women with a guy like that. So, I mean, think about it, you know? We have a question that came in here during the show. Terrible Tommy, if they outlaw cell phones and laptops in airports and on planes, won't that get the population all upset and the enemy going crazy trying to stop high-tech gadget weapons? Sure. And my reply is very simple. Oppression serves our purpose and works against the system. the more they restrict the people, the better, as more and more people see the system as their enemy. That's why overt head-on-head violent activity against the system is not workable at this time, because the system is too strong. The system is eating its tail right now. Why should we interfere? Let it disintegrate more and more and more until such time as we can get a handle on it. In the meantime, the more the government, the more this, well, criminal cabal in Washington and Wall Street and all that stuff flex their muscles and restrict the common man, the more they're going to be hated. And that's not good for the system. It's good for us. Well, I'm sending you out intel, something I received today through the Talkwalker alerts, and that's been reprinted by VNN on the VNN website. Someone has taken the trouble to put the lengthy history of Joe Tomasi's service to the race on VNN. So I have saved it, and also I'm sending it out to you so you can read it over. Since I did know Joe early in my activities, when I was just a little right-wing conservative anti-communist and beginning to become a full-blown racist. And what Joe Tomasi was doing was living up to a real national socialist idea of left-wing national socialism. His whole operation was based like that. They dressed like that, the whole bit. And he was doing a good job at recruiting the right kind of people. Instead of this spit-and-polish, uniform, flag-waving, marching type crap. I don't think anybody will ever know how much crap he got away with, because I know he must have got away with quite a bit. But you never get away with stupid, like the guy who shot him. The kid who shot him. Stupid kid. I don't know. I guess he got some time. I never kept track of it. But what a sad, sad situation. That's the problem when you have bad leadership and they put 16-year-olds, arm them and put them out in front of a place to guard a place. Now, there's some 16-year-olds can handle it, but not many. Well, here's some smart people. Gilbert, Arizona. In many American suburbs, outward signs of life are limited to the blue glow of television screens flickering behind energy-efficient windows. But in a subdivision of this bedroom community outside Phoenix, amid precision-cut lawns and craftsman-style homes, lambs caper in common green areas and chickens scratch in the citrus grove, and the residents roam rows of heirloom vegetables. See what might be good for dinner. The neighborhood is called Agritopia, and it's one of the growing number of so-called agrihoods, residential developments where a working farm is the central feature, in the same way that other communities may cluster around a golf course, pool, or fitness center. The real estate bust in 2008 halted new construction, but with recovery, developers are again breaking ground on farm-focused tracts. At least a dozen projects across the country are thriving, enlisting thousands of home buyers who crave access to open space, verdant fields, and fresh food. There you go. It's spreading, and as long as you can get the water, you're going to be all right. Well, that's it for today, boys and girls. I'll be back tomorrow on Thursday. Thursday, yeah, that's right. And 14.5 in the meantime, and just remember, if you don't listen, you'll have to feel.
Close up the bars and the walls, the talk, man, the stories they tell. still.